Welcome, you wonderful bunch of human beings listening to our podcast, Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 33. It is my delight to be joined by Telmo and Pete on a glorious, sunny English day in the pub, after hours, doing a podcast. Before we kick off, I would like to extend some congratulations to a colleague of ours who I actually haven't seen for quite a while. Matt Appleby is now a Breedlove Guitars artist, which is super cool. I have a Breedlove acoustic and it's wonderful, and that's a pretty cool step for his career. He's an amazing guitarist. Go find him on the Facebook lands. Wonderful gentleman. But we've got our weekly update to do, of course. And is Pete, you were sign languaging at me over there. That means you want to take it away first.
Well, take it away.
It does look that way. Mm-hmm. Yes, so I've been getting involved in the joys of uploading our podcast back catalogue
on the superior
YouTube.
Social media.
Yes,
YouTube,
you have.
Which has been a quite lengthy process because it's mainly the uploading and the processing. It sort of.
Do you have fibre? How's your internet connection?
It's not too bad. It's the old BT fibre broadband, which I believe is approximately, well, it's supposed to be 75 meg download and about 15 to 20 upload.
Yeah, not
so I'm not sure if the speed, the uploading speed is connected directly to my connection or whether YouTube throttles it or controls the speed somewhat at the other end.
What I've noticed is by... hello, by the way.
Oh, hey, Telmo. Who are you?
Who am I? Is this real life? What I've noticed is if I plug in the LAN cables to get the internet straight into the computer instead of using Wi-Fi, it doesn't affect my my download, but it does affect my upload by a good margin, by maybe like 5 to 6 megabytes per second. So I don't know if you...
Yeah, no, these are all hardwired in. They're all hard into the router directly. There's the two... Well, using the two PCs that I have in my office.
So in that case, you should be at your maximum capacity.
But it, there's,
it, maximum it, I mean, potential.
The average length of these, they're all rendered out at 1080p, and the average length of upload seems to be around, I don't know, I want to say about the 40-minute mark to get it up. And then there's quite a time that seems to take to process it because they process it into various different resolutions, don't they?
Cause yeah. They do, yeah.
Sort of do the low-res one and then do the high-res one and so forth. But, yeah, I've got it. I've got a kind of production line going. So we've obviously, and as of today, we'll have 33 episodes to get up there. So I've
Oh, you made a decent stab. You're nearly halfway.
Well, a third, I would like to say. I've done from episode 2 to episode 13, possibly, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in
it's
that
a good
region.
Stab.
I
good
can't
stab.
Remember because I've been actually... working on the video. Well, it's not really a video. It's just, I've used a software program called Magic, which is a sort of VJ program, and then I've got a kind of template, and then the Magic sort of produces a waveform over the top, so it's just so there's something moving, really. But so the aim of it is really to spread the love a bit more, you know, to hopefully more people will discover the Rack Addicts podcast. And potentially, they can obviously listen to it if they want to listen to it on YouTube, or they could then migrate over to their preferred podcasting platform.
Yeah. I think definitely for me, I think I said last time, it's been how I've discovered most things in general. That's how I got into synths in general, how I kept interest in guitar. YouTube has always been my favorite of the social networks.
Yeah, YouTube has been something massive for me. I mean, it just changes through time, obviously, the sort of stuff you listen to and the sort of stuff you look for. But I do believe for listeners, it would be something really cool to get into. Share the love and spread the love if you can. And I think they can find us on Rack Addicts UK, isn't it?
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one on because there are other Rack Addicts. Mm-hmm. There is
and
a
crack addict as well.
Yeah, that's the trouble with that that name.
We'll beat that Google search one day. So massive that a recovering addict won't be able to go anywhere without finding our podcast.
Well, the other Rack Addicts that in the US. So I mean, we've got the UK domain name and other sort of bits and pieces, but the actual rackaddicts.com, I believe, is a purveyor of hunting equipment.
No, it could be worse.
So the rack refers to sort of antlers, I suppose.
Oh, fair enough.
And that type of thing. And then there is a Rack Addicts, I would say group, or some sort of rappers or something. They haven't really, yeah. As far as I could, that was on YouTube, and as far as I could tell, they haven't published anything in 6 or 7 years.
Fair enough.
They've only done about 2 videos.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, it's a big world, and, you know, names get reused, and so I don't think it's copyrighted or anything like that.
Things come and go, and the ones that keep the content going, like our case, will prevail.
Yeah. Have we missed a week yet?
No.
Not even with a bloody virus.
Yeah, we're sitting on a wooden bench as well, so for the superstitious among you, that means we're not going anywhere, apparently.
Yeah, I think it's important, I've said it before, that consistency. I mean, obviously, we strive to improve on quality, and we're always working on ideas, and we've got stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah,
thoughts.
We've got a few bits. We've just been haven't been able to kind of develop those that much with keeping away from each other in various forms over the last few months. We shall explore.
Well, we've kept the plates spinning throughout the pandemic so far. Mm. But, we went sort of from the pub to the sort of remote. And we did the remote thing for quite a number of weeks. I can't remember how many weeks we did remote.
It's a good couple of months. Then we had a couple of tentative ones in the park before we came back here. And then we still got the option of the remote ones. It still works.
Well, the remote ones, the quality was really good because obviously we were using our studios and we were sort of recording indoors. Not indoors, but indoors.
Yeah.
We were recording indoors. As in DAW.
That is an excellent nerdy pun. I love it.
And I preferred the quality. We're using far better microphones. And for anyone, just for our listeners' benefit, we're using sports commentator headsets.
Yep, yep.
It's probably quite an interesting sight in the pub when you see a bunch of people looking like they should be at a football game. It's quite odd.
Yeah, commentating.
It works really well.
We're actually commentating the next table's movement right now. Yeah. And they're about to leave. And there goes another pint.
Yeah, this is Tom actually making it up off the top of his head because there's nobody else around here.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It's pretty dead in here.
Yeah.
Just how we like it.
Yeah, so that's mostly what I've been doing.
Brilliant.
It's Telmo's turn.
Right, so weekly update for me. Back on the production business as usual, still working with those two artists I've mentioned. It's been really interesting to see their reaction. I had an interesting, challenge this week. As I was working one of the songs from one of the artists, and she sent me a song that the vocal lines was great. It was a great tune. It was kind of creepy and weird, and there's a whole vibe to the song. And I think I've shown you just before we started.
Certainly creepy.
Yeah, certainly creepy, but quite like electronic, and I think we can make something interesting out of it. But the instrumental that she sent me sounded exactly like Portishead's Glory Box. I don't know if you guys know Portishead.
Well, I know. I'm familiar with the group.
Yeah, you're familiar with the group. So obviously I've never come across this before. I mean, I've never actually worked on something that I thought, you know, this is plagiarism. You know, I can't really do this. So I got back to her and said, listen, I really don't want to work on this because of that. But if you want, I can kind of redo the instrumental part and I can kind of do something different. So it was quite a cool experience to having just the vocal lines and just kind of work my way harmonically to see where the notes could land.
Yes, yeah, so the technical term for that, I believe, is channeling the vibe.
The vibe. That's exactly it. I've never done it before because normally, you know, you write the instrumental and then there's vocals going on or you add stuff on top of a basses or whatever. But having completely nothing going on and then starting from scratch was quite cool and I really enjoyed it and it's sounding, for me, so much more refreshing. So, yeah, so that was my productive update from the production side. I didn't play a lot of guitar. My practice this week was terrible.
Well, don't worry about it. I haven't practiced guitar in like 5 years.
So there we go. Fine. I think a lot of people.
So was there an explanation why the similarity between the or had it just been plagiarized completely? What was the...
So the whole song, this whole Glory Box song, is literally a chromatic descendance of four notes. So it just goes down, boom, 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 and then it goes back, and it's a loop. And she did exactly the same thing. And I was like... I mean, even... It was a bit slower from the plagiarism point of view. If you would hear the song and you hear Glory Box, you go like, well, this is Glory Box straight away. And you know, of course there's like plenty of blues songs and plenty of electronic songs that you can kind of copy things from each other and you can't really tell, and it's obviously not the same song. But in this case, because it was so dry, it was like...
Was it a conscious decision on her behalf to do that, or was it just happenstance?
It just happened. She didn't even knew the song.
The trouble is, it's like everything. There is only so many variations on note sequences and things like that, and it's...
It was exactly the same key as well.
Okay, well, that doesn't help.
So what was funny is that it wasn't... it's not a major problem. I mean, it sounds great, but I really don't want to work on something that reminds me of something else that already exists, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people...
Yeah, and it could become problematic.
Yeah,
as well. Yeah. Especially if it's that close, you know, you know, Shazam would...
Oh yeah,
misidentify it.
Yeah. So no practicing this week, but I did some arrangements and a couple of tunes that I've been working on, maybe a few covers. I did a little video for Instagram. I did a arrangement of Stairway to Heaven. Which was quite different from the original. And been working on a Coldplay arrangement as well. But
nice.
Check on my Instagram, Telmo Terremoto, and keep your eyes peeled, everybody. How about you, Ben?
I've done nothing musical at all, and it's been excellent.
Amazing.
Rewatching Parks and Recreation, because it's an amazing series that everybody needs to watch. But the more exciting one, exciting to me, anyway. I've been playing a game called Talisman. I have the second edition. This is a board game called Talisman, made by Games Workshop. I think this one was last... Well, this edition, the second edition, is from like 1984 or something. I kind of inherited it, and it's really fun. Games Workshop still exists. They are responsible for Warhammer, which is quite a popular miniatures, painting, tabletop war game type hobby, but they also do boxed board games. So I picked up one of those. I've been painting up the miniatures for it. And it's been pretty cool to explore a game that's... it's sort of a 1v1, and it's actually... It has tactics. The Talisman is a lot of just roll the dice and just hope. There's not really that many decisions that you can make that will, you know, really influence your chances of victory. But this one's got enough elements to make it quite a tactical game, and it's really fun.
Amazing. So what's the whole thing? Do you just need to collect a talisman, or do you have a talisman?
In Talisman, you have to get a talisman to move into the third area and then kill everybody else. That's kind of the end of the game. We've got these three regions in rings. It's really fun. Little fantasy adventure game. So, you know, you could be a troll, a wizard, a sorcerer, a thief, ghoul.
Brilliant.
All this kind of stuff.
I suppose every character has like a different set of skills kind of thing.
Exactly. And you've got to kind of fight monsters and build up your character. It's classic kind of RPG stuff, but it's really cool. And it's really easy to pick up, so we play it with basically all our friends. So that means you're next in line.
Oh, please, take me away.
Do you play remotely in this time?
We've bubbled, as I think the government called it a while ago, with a few people that are living on their own. So we've had people over for that. In accordance with the relevant guidelines from our government, there is not... I don't think playing it remotely would really work too well.
So it really, you really have to be in person, so to speak.
Be like trying to play Scrabble remotely without using an app, just like having a board. And then just imagine like somebody directs you to pick up one piece that you can't see and then place it down. No, we've had people around for that.
There does seem to be an awful lot of bubbling going on all over the place at the moment.
Yeah. But the thing that we've had is like with Telmo, both our other halves worked at the same place.
Yep.
We both work at the same place.
Yep.
And we've been in contact with each other anyway. So there's not much difference there.
Exactly.
It's kind of fine.
Ben is actually coming over tomorrow. We're going to do a little nice dinner and stuff.
Oh, lovely. But,
should be fun.
Yeah.
Should be good. But yeah, board games. I like board games. I said to Telmo earlier, it's refreshing not to be sat in front of a screen for ages. Just kind of doing some painting, playing some board games. It's nice.
It's good to go away from it sometimes.
Mm.
get your mind refreshed.
Yes. Yeah.
But when I have been in front of the screen, I've been reassessing the modular case because it's massive and I want a smaller case.
Right.
So that's always fun, just staring at modular grid for days on end. Going,
how many slots are you looking at?
Well, it's going to be 62 HP, so really like this big.
Yeah.
This big. On the IntelliGel pallet cases is the current plan, I think. Companion to the Digitact and the Subharmonicon.
So that can be small. Is that going to be the sum and total of everything, or is it just a recon?
I'm just going to keep it to that because I'm sick of having so much stuff in general.
Yeah.
Like what I've been doing recently is trying to confine various hobbies and belongings to a set area. So if it all fits in one drawer or it all fits in one box and I can put it away out of sight, I find the clutter a lot less stressful. So with the pallets, you get like the little bag, and it's small enough that it's pretty trivial just to take it out of the bag and put it on a desk. If I can fit it all in the one bag and put it away, then that will please me.
Yeah, I can appreciate the sentiment about the clutter, and I know how stressful. I mean, I get quite agitated because I live in a lot of clutter, and it's very stressful.
Well, without a dedicated space for it, because we're just a small flat, that's when the clutter does start to encroach a little bit.
Really impinge. I mean, you see, I've got a few rooms. I can just shut the door on certain bits of clutter.
Yeah.
But I do like the premise of everything having its place. Like, you know, you open drawers and everything is just so. And
yeah.
That does appeal, but it's heavy maintenance. And depending, I mean, I've got two adult children at home, so they're not too bad. It's not like having children, but it's still conflicting
spaces.
Conflicting spaces, so to speak. So my daughter's the kitchen table is sort of a sort of art area. So it's always sort of various paintings and drawings and things being sort of fabricated on there. It's just not always convenient when you want to eat your dinner.
That. If you got the space, you can compartmentalize things quite nicely. But having one room that's kitchen, living, dining, photography studio half the time, and music room because there's a piano in it. It's a little bit difficult to, and actually it's the garden as well because I've got all my plants in the window there. There's a lot going on.
But you are I don't know how far have you got with your moving plans.
We've actually got in touch with the landlord, so we're now just on a 1 month like rolling thing. So that takes a lot of stress out of it. So we can just
if you find somewhere, you can kind of just say, go, right, we're off.
End of this month, you have to pay for that month, and then we'll just be out, and it should be fine. So it was good to get that sorted. Pedro from Gascoigne Peas. If you're listening, you're a hero. Thank you for saving me from all that stress.
What a lad.
Literally, I think he was on furlough, and I'd sent my third angry final email saying, I will take it from your lack of reply to mean that we are now approved to do whatever. And he sent an email, like sort of 2 minutes later, because he'd in the space of receiving my email, he'd called the landlord, got the thing approved, and emailed me back. It was amazing. So, yeah. Gascoigne Peas, a letting agent
spotted
being
by.
Really good. Wow, I didn't think that would happen, ever.
I have.
They actually do that. They actually do their job sometimes, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose they want to be flexible because there's going to be all sorts of
weirdnesses going on right now. Yeah.
Exactly. I can complain with my recent move. It was quite flexible as well from their point of view. It was like a month, and they're like, okay, bye.
There we go. We have topics today. Topics two. Pete's found a pretty cool one. Twisted Electrons. They've made a lot of small little doodads. There's one, I think, kind of a little acid box. So I think it was thinking TB-303 style stuff. But this one, the Mega FM. Really hands-on FM synthesizer. And I'd like to call it Knobby. I mean, it's got faders, but, you know, it's hands-on. You can really get in there and really control FM synthesis with more than one slider and a button.
Yeah.
Looking at you, DX7.
The cool thing is that it's like you say, it's an FM synth that's got knobs. So it doesn't have a screen, and Mega is written in the same font as Sega.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's amazing.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Ooh,
because that's,
tell us.
That's
Is that the chip that it's using?
Yeah,
or
that's
something?
That's it's it. There is a relationship.
For all the Sonic fans out there, we love you too.
So the YM2612 FM chip was is that that has Sega connotations then?
Yes.
Cool.
Okay.
I
so
like
12
it.
Voice polyphony, 8 algorithms, 600 preset memory. It's got 4 voicing modes, poly 12 stereo.
I think the make or break for it to be an incredible little box. Does it have any effects?
Let's see.
As we stare at...
Oh, we're staring at our picture with the
vibrato,
silence.
Rate, and depth. That's pretty much...
any effects. Ah, it, that's so annoying. It's like the... any sort of monosynth or something that just doesn't have... Even the most basic of delays gives any instrument, any electronic instrument, so much more mileage. Just a really simple delay, simple reverb. That'd be that. Because you don't have to think about anything else, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does look really cool, though, because it's got, you know, the little algorithm bits printed on the front. So if you want to, if you're a really big fan of FM synthesis, maybe you've got a Volker FM, because that's easier to program. This, you've got even more freedom just because it's all presented there. You've got sort of fader banks per operator.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool, cool layout.
I mean, quite a nice lot of polyphony, 12 voice polyphony. The videos I've watched, it's quite an interesting instrument. And I'm not sure if it really needs effects. I mean, you could always add an effects pedal or something.
I mean, can you consider vibrato an effect?
Nah.
No? Well, it's just a wiggly-wiggly.
the wibbly-wibbly.
Certainly some of the patches or some of the things that were produced from it sounded as though they had effects, but that just might be the... conglomeration of all these various features.
Has it got a loop mode? What's that?
Probably like one of the envelopes.
But
like
the fact that it's FM synthesis with sliders and controllers rather than some obscure method of programming.
Ultra menu driven.
It looks accessible. That's the thing, the point that
it
seems
does.
To leap out to me.
And the fact that it looks... It looks nice. It's nice and smart as well. It could fit any of your kit, really. I mean,
all the Twisted Electron stuff does feel really nice. I met one of them once. I can't remember. I think it was like in the used section of a guitar. I can't imagine they sold that very easily. But no, it's all really nicely built. Looks great. I am excited to hear more.
I can see it's going for. Apparently, £485 UK pounds.
Not too
Pete,
bad.
Can you confirm that? Or
yeah, well, I've got the price. I mean, that's the price I saw, which is directly on their website, and it's €474 without VAT.
Without VAT.
Yeah. So, if any retailers have got it,
the one I'm looking at, it's including VAT, and £485.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, manufacturers will always have a higher price because they can't be undercutting the retailers that they're supplying and the rely. I mean, I wasn't that aware of these. Obviously, you were, Ben, as a manufacturer.
Yeah, only in sort of passing. I did email them a couple of times saying, "Hey, I want to stock your stuff because it's well cool in it." Then they ignored me. So.
Really? So
what's this young kid saying?
I don't know how large their production runs are. So
who knows? I couldn't find a distributor or anything for them, so I just emailed them directly. Just didn't get anything.
Strange.
The
recently,
big sad.
This
was like 2 years ago. And they didn't have anything this big. It was all kind of smaller stuff. But I think all their stuff's really interesting. Quite a cool little company.
There are a few videos on their YouTube channel as well that you can check if you want to see how it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that when I get home because I'm very interested.
I'm sort of. It's just slightly on the... It's not pricey, but it's just slightly on the not that cheap kind of.
I know what you mean.
You know, it depends. I mean, if it's a choice between this and maybe something else.
Yeah, if you get it and it feels, you know, just perfect, then I'd be very happy with that kind of price.
Yes, and it looks well constructed. I mean, it's got quite, what is it, brushed aluminium?
Yeah, like that, just kind of bent shape for the front panel. Just nice stuff.
It's definitely one of their most expensive products, if you look at the rest of the stuff that Twisted Electrons are doing. I mean,
there's those really small ones that, as I can see as you're scrolling past, these little things.
The Crazy Eight.
Yeah, the Crazy Eight. That's one of the little sequences that I'd seen before.
That looks quite cool.
Yeah, so we don't have our jingles ready yet, but this is the bit where the Behringer's At It Again jingle plays. Ben from the ModCaf, one of the three Bens at the ModCaf anyway, has posted in the ModCaf chat. It's a new Eurorack module line, and it's another BARP situation, like the BARP Odyssey. Anyway, Behringer's ARP 2500 modules. They look really cool. Silver panels, knobs. You know, you get those plastic, just straight cylinders knurled on the outside and then kind of a shiny finish on the top with a dot, like these ones, little anodized kind of colours.
Oh, that looks really cool.
Looks really pretty.
Are those some of the, like, the mini... Oh, no, they're not. Sorry.
Yeah, so we've got the classic ARP logo with, you know, the treble clef with the plug on it. And there's this mix sequencer module 1050, which has some very, well, I hope they're satisfyingly tactile buttons. I don't actually know what this guy's... We've got 8-step sequencer with some weirdnesses on it. What I hope... Actually, I'm not even going to try and hope, because Behringer have disappointed me every time, is that
is
they've actually...
Is this the last hope? Or is it a new hope?
Maybe they've actually put some effort in to make sure that the kind of the trigger inputs and things are all the right kind of compatibility with everything else, like they didn't bother to do with their Moog modular clones.
Yeah.
What I suspect they've done is just done some kind of power converter thing from the regular Eurorack standard, completely cloned the circuit, slapped a panel on it, and called it a day. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. I don't know. I don't actually know a massive amount about the 2500, apart from the fact that it's enormous and has pin matrices. What do you know about it, Pete?
Not a great deal, but I think we looked at this when we were talking about the 2600, the Korg one when it was released, and we were sort of looking at some of the lineage. And I think this was the beastie that was sort of set for universities and so forth. For sort of, is that the $100,000 jobby?
Probably.
it's an absolute
very
beast.
Cheap.
Yeah,
looks great as well.
So, is there any examples that anyone could look at of the? The Behringer one, is it on their website?
Oh yeah, no, I've got pictures hanging about. They don't resemble the what I know of the 2500 a massive amount. Obviously, they're completely different shape and size, and there's no pin matrices around.
Yeah,
but there we go. They certainly look nice.
Yeah. I mean, there is a familiarity. The sort of with the if you look at the original.
Oh, colour scheme then. Yeah,
the colour scheme is sort of. Echoes it a bit, but they don't have any pin matrix.
No, and I think that's one of the cool things about it, that if you're just going Eurorack style, you're not really going to get, unless obviously they make a pin matrix module, which I think already exists.
I'm looking at the clocked sequential. I'm looking at the clocked sequential control, and look at all the knobs there. They're absolutely crammed.
They are. At least they're not the really tiny trimmer pots that you can never get any accurate kind of control of.
So
I think it should be okay, as long as there's nothing digital in there. If they've just stuck relatively faithfully to the circuitry, they haven't tried to add any sort of digital effects or anything like that. That's where, as I've said many times before, that's where some of these Behringer stuff really goes wrong, because they try and mesh the old with the new and do it on a budget.
Yeah, they certainly have a really cool aesthetic. And all when they label it, in sort of historic fashion, with all the weird words like inharmonic preset control voltages and unmod and mod buttons. What do they do? Like when resonance was called emphasis. I like it when they stick to the old the vintage terminology. That's quite fun. So yeah, they've been teased now. We'll probably see them in 2 years, maybe, perhaps.
Have they actually released any of the other ones we've discussed? The Moog.
Every time I've seen them, so there's they did the Roland S System 100.
Yes,
they did those. Haven't seen anybody using them, and then the Moog ones. They've all been on Toman as available in 6 to 8 weeks, which, as far as I know, is code for we have no idea when we're going to get it. So I don't know No idea what kind of time scale.
Literally from the beginning of the year. Yeah. I suppose there's been a pandemic in between.
Yeah, I mean, how much is that really
going to
change?
Stop teasing.
It's going to be a long time. I'm just waiting for the ARP Quadra. And just going to get my Genesis on. It'll be amazing. Or if they do a Prophet 5. That'd be nice.
What if they don't?
Prophet 10. Oh my.
No, there's no rumours of Jupiters as well.
Yep. Because, the CS80 was the big rumour.
Yeah.
Because we know they have one. And they've teased their, digital mock-ups of it. But that's about it. I know they filed some kind of legal something about poly-aftertouch keyboards. I don't really know.
Well, they have about 70 years of SINTs to copy. So there's plenty of products.
What about
there?
The 2600, which was waved around?
Haven't heard any more about that. Yeah, it's always the same when we talk about Behringer's. Oh, they've teased this, 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 and this. Have we seen any more of it? No. When will it arrive? We've only just got TD3s kind of knocking about, because we had so many thousands and thousands of pre-orders for them. We've only just got free stock kind of kicking about. Because before they were just coming in, going straight out the door.
Got loads of RDs in all the colours as well.
Wait, there are colours of...
Yes, they are.
What do you mean the TDs, though?
The RDs.
That's the drum machine.
Yeah.
So I was there's just only one colour.
No, there's more colours.
What?
There's red... There's yellow. Oh man, I could go through.
You're thinking of the little one. It's this big.
Yeah.
No, that's the TD3.
Is it the TD3?
Yeah. Because there's yellow, red, blue, black, and silver.
Is it the yellow with a little smiley?
Yeah, it's got
on?
The smiley.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So that's okay.
We're thinking
so
the right thing.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, we've got them around though. That's about it for news, I believe. It's time for YouTube recommendations. I haven't actually got one queued up because I totally forgot we do this now. I say now. We've been doing it for ages. Totally unprepared. Either of you chippity chaps got one lined up to tell us about?
I do. I guess I'll start with it. There's a really cool YouTube channel called Scary Pockets.
I love Scary Pockets.
Of course you do. Any people that enjoy music at any level.
And anybody that enjoys anything will like Scary Pockets.
Exactly. Scary Pockets.
Periscockets, yes.
Periscockets.
Spoonerism is my only form of humour. Let me have that one.
Oh, you do have it. Yeah, so what they do is that they got this this in-house band in a studio, and they call in musicians, so it's a rotating band. They do really cool covers of pop songs, and they turn it into really funky, sort of like almost disgustingly funky.
It's pretty outrageous. Let Me Love You, Justin Bieber, one with Antoine Stanley. I don't like the song. Until he sings it, it's amazing.
Dude, you would not think that Imagine by John Lennon could sound this funky. when you hear Scary Pockets playing it. I mean, they do the arrangement, they get together, they come up with different ways of playing it. There's just a really tight band and really tight musicians, really talented singers that come in, do a session, and they just spread the love and just show us how music can be... So beautiful. The last video was uploaded a week ago, and this is one that I really enjoyed, Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. And this one is particularly cool because I don't know if you know. Oh, there we go.
Oh, we've got the lead.
So it's featuring Eliz Trout, and she's a drummer as well, but she's singing beautifully in this song. It's a song that's literally two chords, and they managed to make it so tight and so cool and so interesting harmonically as well. It's definitely my recommendation of the week. Do help yourselves, boys.
Nice one. I mean, I've been chewing through that stuff for ages. But Pete, that means you have to now listen to Scary Pockets.
Okay.
And also recommend us something from YouTube. Hooray!
Right. Of course, I'm going to recommend Rack Addicts UK.
Oh, yeah. What an interesting channel that we've never heard
today.
Of before.
So, but apart from that, one of the ones I would recommend, and it's, I think a lot of people might already know it. Unfortunately, the main one has gone behind a paywall. It comes under the Motor Trend channel, which is a conglomeration of all sorts of different programming. And the one that I cottoned on to was called Roadkill. And then they've got a kind of a whole load of variety that stems out of that. And they've been doing sort of whole episodes back on YouTube. I think they're mostly trying to get more people to subscribe to the paywall. But I believe all the old Roadkill episodes are there. And there's a good couple of years of it. And as you could possibly detect from the description, or if you know the channel already, it's sort of very car enthusiastic, a US car enthusiastic sort of type of
muscle
themed.
Car.
Yeah, thing, that yeah. type of thing. But there's all sorts of things they're into. They're doing a bit of hot rodding, or they. And then the Roadkill thing was all about getting something that was sort of literally falling apart. I mean, some of my favourite episodes, they just go to a junkyard, walk around and pick a car, and then they've got to get that car running the junkyard, mainly from. Hopefully from bits they can find in the junkyard, but they
just reminds me of Scrap Heap Challenge, which is my favourite TV show.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But basically, they've decided that so they'll descend on and they'll go this 1959 Chevy pickup or something like that, and we're going to get it running, and then we've got to drive it 400 miles.
Oh yeah,
before it explodes and be somewhere.
Yeah.
And invariably, I mean, sometimes it works out, sometimes it just doesn't work out. It's a complete failure, but it. Unlike a lot of other things, these guys really know what they're talking about. They know this stuff inside out, and it's just quite amusing. And they've multiplied. There's just the one Roadkill channel, and now there's about five of different flavors. So you've got Roadkill Garage, and the one that I saw was I think it was Roadkill Junkyard Gold.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the team that's involved was going around, and he clearly had more information than you care to shake a stick at on virtually anything. He was going through these cars, lifting up the bonnets, and he was looking and saying, well, when this one came off the production line, it had this extra, you know, whoever bought it had paid for this extra pack or this extra add-on, and he almost knew the part number of the add-on, and he knew how much it cost when it was bought in 1971 and all this sort of stuff. I mean, he was just an encyclopedia of this sort of stuff. But it's done. The production is very high quality. I think they, whether it's directly connected to Hot Rod magazine, or certainly one of the guys was or still is the editor for Hot Rod magazine. But everyone involved really knows their stuff. And again, it's one of those situations where there's some sort of subtle pleasure where people really know what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Over geeky with it. It's just the right level of knowledge. There's the quite a liberal sprinkling of humour.
Yeah, delivered in quite an accessible way.
Yeah, they seem to really enjoy each other's company. In that respect. So it's very convivial. So in some respects, it's not quite the sort of the Top Gear thing, which was sort of more verging on the ludicrous.
Yeah, and rapidly got further and further away from actually being a car show.
And also,
which is why I liked
clearly,
it.
Although they had a certain knowledge, they certainly didn't have the kind of extreme in-depth knowledge that these guys do. So there is a whole variety. Unfortunately, they made the decision, I think, about a year ago to take the main channels behind a paywall, because I think they've built up enough following to do that. But the back catalogue of the stuff they publish is still out there, and it's all worth a watch. And as I say, currently at the moment, they seem to be trying to entice people over to the paywall throwing these free episodes onto YouTube.
Brilliant.
So that's my this week's recommendation.
Nice one. I'm going to recommend somebody that I know we've mentioned before. But if you've been listening to us rant about modulary type stuff or anything synthesizer in general, you're like, oh, yeah, synths are cool, but I must know more. If you want to know more, go and watch literally any Mylar Melodies video. Mm. So he works for the distribution company that does Moog, Arturia, loads of big brands, and he has his own YouTube channel. And there's a certain way that he explains things, and he just really gets his enthusiasm across through liberal expression with his hands, and he just has a great manner. Really entertaining videos. I've got kind of
Coast. He's like almost Italian, isn't he?
The gesticulation is incredible.
That's beautiful.
But no, he explains things really well. Does some fun bits. Recently, I was very impressed with his demo of the Subharmonicon, where he had it racked up with the other little Moog semi-modulars, or the Moog, excuse me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm just trying to remember which combination he had.
32,
so he's got DFAM, Mother 32, Subharmonicon, and later he brings in, what's that, is that two DFAMs? Oh man, he's really going over the top, but he explains it briefly and then just jams for like a good 15 more minutes with loads of different ideas, and it's a really good demo. Again, it's suffused with his personality. He's really engaging, really funny, and very, very knowledgeable, and he's got a lot of videos about kind of his live system, so you can kind of see his thought processes for doing live techno. And he interviews people, he has a semi-regular kind of podcast situation. Excellent channel, you've got to subscribe.
Amazing.
Mylar Melodies, and he's a really nice guy in person as well.
Well, there you go. You've heard it from the source, boys.
Yes, that will be the end of another Rack Addicts podcast. Do remember to go and find us on literally any podcast streaming service, but now, most importantly to me, because I love YouTube.
YouTube!
Rack Addicts UK, that will also be a very convenient place for you to leave comments, and we'll be there, we'll be chatting as well. But you have an excellent week, and we'll see you in the same time in whichever place you choose. Farewell.